Gotcha. Welcome to the Village Oak Tree. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell. With the weather outside frightful all across North America again this week, and with all the chaos Trump and company are still creating all across the world, the average citizens everywhere are starting to feel it. Once again, I've discovered news stories from across the spectrum to point a finger at all how all this is going to affect the average citizens here in the U.S. and this week, Europe. Once I brought you the stories and commentary for this week, I'll ask everyone to stick around through my commercial break so I can read you another chapter of The Priest from Michael Campy. So, come sit you down next to someplace warm and listen to me tell you a little bit about what the media is not telling you. So, more and more chaos across the world, especially in Europe right now, after Vice President J.D. Vance's inflammatory speech in Munich last week. He's basically telling the EU that the U.S. is stepping back from Europe and Ukraine is their problem now. Meanwhile, Trump is telling Zelensky that he must give 50% of all their mineral wealth in Ukraine to the U.S. to pay back the money the U.S. gave them to fight their war. Zelensky refused the deal, so things are moving around them. Trump and Putin are scheduled to have their first Ukraine negotiation in Saudi Arabia soon without Ukraine or Europe invited. So you have to know, this set off a lot of shouting and gnashing of teeth in Europe. You know, the big thing about all this is that right now, the new Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, and the equivalent Secretary of State from Russia met in Saudi this week and did this a little bit of initial negotiations and so on. And I had a report this morning saying that basically, somebody's upset because it sounds like Trump's giving Putin whatever he wants. Well, you know, we'll have to wait and see how that works out. Meanwhile, Macron and a bunch of other people, leaders from the EU, have gotten together, all upset about what Trump's doing and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, there's a whole lot of chaos going on in Europe right now over all of this. And speaking of chaos, I want to, you know, this whole idea is to keep this at a kind of a street level, okay? So also from Europe, I started subscribing to a young Austrian lady who likes to give YouTube news reports about the news from around Europe. She likes to focus on the politics and the economics over there to give everyone an idea what it's like to live in Europe now. For the average citizens, it's getting pretty bad, according to her. The price of energy and groceries is getting out of hand, and they wonder why the AfD is becoming so popular in the rural areas of Austria and Germany. Does this sound familiar? So if you're interested in listening to her, her YouTube channel is called Surviving Lily. You know, and now we move across to Palestine. It's business as usual. Israel's killing and bombing people still while the ceasefires are sort of holding together by threats. Although the one with Lebanon is coming upon its deadline very soon. With all the violations that Israel committed, Hezbollah is likely to come out of the ceasefire swinging heavily. It seems that the Israelis have left, sort of. They pulled back, leaving five small outposts behind, much like what they're doing in southern Syria. So the question being asked is, now what? And that's exactly it. What are we going to see now that the ceasefire is pretty much over with? And what are they going to do? I don't know. Again, it changes on a daily basis. Israel is still tearing up the West Bank with little interference, and the ceasefire in Gaza is running on very thin threads. Now, they are still a ceasefire. They are exchanging hostages, you know, what they can, and they're still kind of going through. So, you know, Hamas is hoping that it's going to hold. But, you know, knowing Israel, chances are they're going to find something. I got a feeling the only reason it's held together so far is because there's some leverage being held over Israel right now, making them stay with it. So in Central Africa, the war in Sudan is still ongoing, as is the one in the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo. South Africa is still reeling from Trump's latest deal, offering sanctuary to the white Afrikaners in the U.S. And, you know, he wants to let them come here because they're being picked on. All because of that new land law they passed that Trump didn't like. Sounds like maybe a few Krugerrands may have been passed to the Trump's campaign, and he's going to do what it takes to keep them happy and the money flowing. I don't know. That may be a backdoor deal we may never know about. In the U.S., Trump and his crew are still gutting the federal government. Last week, I reported that the new education secretary was supposed to be a figurehead with no real job, as Trump wants to close the Department of Education, but can't without the approval of Congress. Meanwhile, he's telling his people to shut it all down as much as possible. So I'm going to start pulling up some news articles here and kind of give you an idea of what we're talking about. So let me pull up this first one here. And this is part of the Department of Education's deal. So let me do this. And so this is basically what I was just talking about. Remember I said last week, the new Secretary of State was basically told, sit in your chair, don't do anything, shut it all down. And now we're seeing, like in this article here from ProPublica, we've been essentially muzzled. Department of Education halts thousands of civil rights investigations under Trump. And you know, it says since Inauguration Day, the Office for Civil Rights has only opened about 20 investigations focused on Trump's priorities, placing more than 10,000 student complaints related to disability access and sexual and racial harassment on hold. Now, that's just one thing, okay? But basically, they're shutting down pretty much all of it. And as Trump said, he wants to kick it back to the states, okay? So, you know, I'm like, all right, whatever. Again, this is going to be an ongoing thing. We really don't know where this is all going to end up here. But that's what's been said so far. So now all we can do is run with what we know. Okay. So then I have this other article here. That's kind of runs with more about this, what I was just talking about. So let me bring this up here. And there's this one from The Guardian. It says Trump administration gives schools deadline to cut DEI or lose federal funds. So what did I just say? My first article was Trump wants to, you know, cut funds for everything. And now he's telling them basically, Cut all your DEI stuff out across the country, or we're going to pull all your funding. And of course, you know, colleges are scrambling like crazy to get this done. But it goes to show you where this is all going. And so let's go. And, you know, here's the other thing. This is just Department of Education, right? So let me kind of bring this up. So, as I said, 2 weeks to dump DEI or lose federal, and schools are scrambling to comply. Is this a deliberate attempt to set up college enrollments for only those who could afford it? No more Pell Grants or school loans backed by the federal government? Other departments and agencies are seeing their staff being furloughed, laid off, terminated, so on. Then we have blatant corrupt officials installed in positions that are sure to further erode the ability of the federal government to take care of essential services needed by so many people in the country and abroad. And I found an article in ProPublica about one such man. Let me see if I can find. Yeah, there's this guy right here. All right. He's been kicked out of several government positions for incompetence, colluding with people in Bosnia behind the ambassador's back. And this is like back in the late 90s, 1990s, and you know, the aughts. And other things. And now he's the director for foreign assistance with the State Department. He's in a prime position to dismantle foreign aid to other countries. With his record, there'll be some bad things to come out of this before they fire him again. So let me pull this guy up here. And you need to get to know this guy. His name is Peter Morocco, and he's in charge of the foreign aid going out to USAID, but he also controls any of USAID's funding for programs here in the United States. So if you wonder why something got cut, it's probably this guy. He's the guy who probably cut it for you. So, and you know, chances are, you know, like last time Trump had people in office, he started firing them after they started screwing up. Well, this guy might be one. He might be one of those, you know, but we got to give him time to do his dirty deeds. And then when people, you know, in a public outcry, Trump will fire him and get somebody else in there. So in New York, the New York State, the state judicial system took a big hit when nearly all of the state prosecutors, regardless of party affiliation, resigned en masse. And another famous litigator resigned a day later with a fiery letter over Trump's justice office, demanded that the corruption charges be dropped for the New York City mayor, Eric Adams, for favors rendered. You can't be more blatant mafia-style corruption scandal. You can't find one anywhere. And then Trump just pardoned a corrupt former Illinois official, Rod Blagojevich. He just recently, because he's another loyalist. So let's talk about this next one. They called this the Thursday afternoon massacre. Okay. So I've got this article from Substack by a guy by the name of Kevin Cruz. And he talks all about how all these people just quit over the corruption. One guy was all about it here. You know, this guy, Emil Bove, you know, facilitated it. This Republican deputy, she's a Trump owner. I'm going to read this to you. So let me pull this up here. You can kind of read along a little bit. According to a must-read letter from Trump's own appointee as U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Danielle Sassoon, Emily Bove III overruled the prosecutors who were planning to introduce a superseding indictment, which included additional charges, so on and so forth. And furthermore, as Sassoon relayed in her letter, Bove didn't just overrule the prosecutors and report to him. He proposed a new defense for the politician they were trying to convict, suggesting that the prosecution interfering with a vitally important project around the immigrants. So in other words, as long as Eric Adams was willing to round up immigrants all over New York City, he could get off and they would pressure the prosecutors to leave him alone. So, you know, quid pro quo, all right? Come on now. It doesn't get more blatant than that. I'm sorry. Like I said, I'll put all these things in the links, but you get the idea. All these people quit, and then a day later, there was another guy who was pretty famous. You know, he quit right off. Let me see if I can... I don't know. He didn't write it in this article here. But here's, I have this other article here. Another lead prosecutor. And his name is Hagan Scotton from the 7th Federal the 7th Federal Prosecutor signed a New York corruption case to resign after refuse. And this is what he said. I expect you will eventually find someone who is enough of a fool or enough of a coward to file your motion, Scotton wrote in a fiery letter obtained by the New York Times. But it was never going to be me. And again, this is, they're calling this the, you know, the massacre of attorneys here. So that's pretty sad, you know, when you got things like that going on. So that's, you know, basically what they're saying is they don't care if they're breaking any laws. They're not trying to hide what they're doing. Trump's basically saying, I'm untouchable, and so are my people. Come and get us if you dare. With all the firings and terminations going on, I picked one out that will likely go relatively unnoticed. The resignation of the head of the National Archives. I got this out of Mother Jones. So there's another article about people resigning all over the federal government. National Archives head resigns as Trump takes control of records. Sources name conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt and far-right journalist John Solomon as potential replacements. Well, you know, it's like putting Joe Rogan in charge of all this stuff. So, you know, you get an idea what's going on here. Basically, with all the firings and terminations going on, this agency keeps the records of government and other historical documents. With Trump in charge, his prosecution for running off and possibly selling of classified documents after his last term, that goes away. So Trump can now rewrite history in his favor and never be prosecuted for hoarding all those documents down at Mar-a-Lago not so long ago and possibly selling them to foreign agents. That story disappeared quickly. They're not talking about whether he sold anything to any foreign agents anymore. So another set of agencies that have been gutted in this rolling purge are the health agencies, because the ones associated with both the ones associated with USAID and the WHO, but also the ones that receive support for researching infectious diseases and providing medical assistance. So I've got another article here from one of my favorite doomers. And she's been around for several years, writing about all the bad things that are going on around us. And her name is Jessica Wildfire. You can find her on Substack under the Sentinel Intelligence. And everything you need to know about H5N1 bird flu, an article with ongoing updates. So here's the thing. She's been talking about this a lot, all right? And her article talks about how to take care of ourselves when bird flu finally breaks out everywhere. So we remember what happened across the world with COVID back in late 2019 and 2020. So it's something I mentioned on a post on her article here. I think we may already be there. So my son was fighting a bout of the flu recently, according to my daughter-in-law. My very good friend in Florida had a back out of a podcast with me recently for the same thing. Told me he had tested for flu. My wife reported me recently that the rate of recorded COVID infections was through the roof in my state, according to one of her friends on WeChat. So that begs the question, how bad is the flu virus around the country right now? Still winter in most of the Northern Hemisphere, and that's keeping people inside a lot this time of year. I mean, it's snowing outside my studio here right now. Colds, COVID, and flu viruses are being passed around like crazy when school-age kids bring it home and infect everyone in the house. With everyone staying inside due to the cold and snowy weather, it only gets worse. So for anyone who's ever raised kids, they know what I'm talking about. My question is, just how bad is it right now? With the CDC gutted, no one is making reports to the government anymore, according to Ms. Wildfire. So even if you do get sick, who are you going to tell? There's no one left to tell anymore, at all, apparently. And I read an article this morning on this very same thing. So the big thing about this is what I was saying, and this article kind of reinforces that. Now, I didn't pull it up here, but it is saying that the flu virus, this regular flu virus that everybody's talking about, is running rampant across the country right now. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are sick with it right now. I think in the article quoted like 820,000 cases have been reported. And that's just the ones that are being reported. That does not include all the ones not being reported. So when you have reporting stations that are gone dark because there's no funding anymore, you have to wonder. So here's the thing. What's going to happen when, and I say when, because we're past the if stage, bird flu starts killing a lot of people like back in 2020 during the COVID pandemic? How many flu victims actually have bird flu and don't know it? There have been a reported 67 people so far that have contracted H5N1 bird flu, but how many are going unreported or misdiagnosed as regular flu? With the federal government kicking everything back to the states to take care of now, we all know how Trump would handle a new pandemic from the last time we endured one back in late 2019 and 2020. My advice, is for everyone to check out this article and click the links with a list of things you could use to protect yourselves, because the government's not going to help you. My daughter-in-law complained of having pink eye in both eyes when I talked to her a couple of weeks ago. Bleeding eyes, which is commonly mistaken for pink eye, is one of the symptoms of bird flu, according to Jessica Wildfire. Did my son and daughter-in-law have bird flu and it wasn't diagnosed correctly or at all? You know, that makes you wonder. With medical services being severely diminished in the U.S. and around the world, actually, what few doctors that are left are being overworked in rural areas, and they're not so rural anymore. The healthcare systems in the U.S. and other countries, such as Canada and the U.K., are collapsing due to a severe shortage of qualified doctors. And add that to all the losses of healthcare administrators being able to take care of yourselves is becoming more paramount all the time. So with that in mind, I would say go out and scavenge up some medical books written for the average person to put in your homes for future use. You might be able to survive the coming collapse. It's already started in earnest in the rural areas of North America and the UK. Soon, it will manifest in the more suburban areas, and after that, everywhere. Doctors are retiring, and young people do not have the resources anymore to pay for medical schools. For most of the Americans, venture capitalism is where college students are going after graduation, and to a lesser degree, the tech industry. The medical profession requires too much work and money to get into anymore, and the affluent kids who could be doctors would rather get rich quick by getting into the finance investment industry and into tech. That is where they think the money is now. Law school is probably still popular with the rich kids as the law degree helps with getting into politics and to a degree finance. I've seen quite a few urgent care facilities up close over the last few years as they close up because they can't afford to stay open. Lack of doctors and nurses, for one thing, is creating a severe shortage of healthcare everywhere. Equity management companies buying up the real estate out from under these facilities is also becoming a big issue. Basically, they buy out the real estate, sell it off, or they rent it back to the people using the building at a higher rate, and they can't afford it, so they close down. There are no good answers for this other than for us to learn how to take care of ourselves for anything other than the most serious medical issues. Because, pretty soon, the nearest hospital may be a very long ways if you live in a rural state. I say maybe, but this is actually true. You got a lot of states, especially out west, places like Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, and Colorado, and all these other places. You get away from the urban areas, and hospitals are a long drive away, especially for specialty care. Now, my sister-in-law is going through that right now. She had something she needed a specialist for because of an injury from a car accident. They had to drive over an hour away, one way, to see a doctor in her state. This is becoming the new normal in U.S. and Canada. And I say Canada because Canada's having a big problem with that too. They've had to close down a lot of their hospitals because of doctor shortages and financing. Canada has such a severe shortage of family practitioners that wait times for appointments for family medicine in the poor provinces can be up to months away. You know, I would give an example like New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, the Maritime provinces. You go out west, places like Saskatoon, Alberta, they're having trouble with putting together facilities for people to go to. Now, I have basic medical books in my house to manage the smaller things. We have a couple of Chinese herbal medicine and some survival guides with basic first aid procedures in them if things get really bad where I am. I was also trained in basic combat first aid in the military, so I can manage if I have to. Not everyone is trained or capable, but you can be if you want to. There are a lot of YouTube videos out these days that can help. There are also local institutions like the Red Cross and others that still teach some classes, but the grant money for those will probably dry up soon, if it hasn't already. I recommend books, though, because if the grid collapses, so will the internet. You don't need electricity to read a book. When I was growing up, reading by lantern and candlelight was a real thing. We used to experience lots of power outages in rural Maine. I grew up in an old farm back in the 1960s and the early 1970s. We always kept oil lanterns, candles, and flashlights around because of the frequent outages. In later years, when I moved back home after my military career, I still experienced occasional power outages in the 21st century, as once again, I was living in a very rural part of Maine. Although rarely reported, this is apparently a fairly regular occurrence in the poorest parts of the states and the richest country of the world, or that's what they tell us we are anyway. I'm not talking about when the power grid goes down due to an extreme weather event. I'm talking about everyday life. Old power pole transformers going out in a thunderstorm or a heavy snowstorm, for example. Trees falling on power lines and the crews no longer available to take care of things anymore, or other weather-related infrastructure failures. Even just failures outright because of old age. We can expect to see a lot more of this starting this year due to lack of people going out there and putting it back together again. This is what happens when people like Elon Musk are allowed to gut the civil service to make the government run more efficiently. Essential services end up not being there anymore. So you had better get used to more things like extended power outages, lack of health care providers, and other essential services no longer being available here in the near future. The infrastructure in the U.S. is failing everywhere. And now that the federal government is being gutted to make it more efficient, there will be fewer and fewer people to repair things like bridges, electric power transmission systems, internet infrastructure, roads, and other basic things we take for granted every day. Without the federal government to oversee these things, private corporate providers will not be held to task if they fail to provide something to somewhere. This means that without the federal government, services will fail and only be provided to areas that can afford to pay whatever the corporations want to charge. No money, no services. For those very rural areas of the country, sorry, Charlie, if the state and local municipalities are broke, there will be no electricity, water, healthcare, internet, or other essential community services anymore. Maine just went through this not too long ago and lost the argument a year or so ago. They wanted to move away from private corporations owning their electric power grids, but they couldn't convince enough voters to go along with it. Such is the power of the lobbyists. Wait until these providers run the utility prices up beyond the ability of consumers to pay. States like Maine will end up back where the way they used to were when I was a kid. The local communities will have to get used to frequent power outages once again. I mention Maine a lot because I lived there a number of years, and I know firsthand what it's like. But there are a lot of other poor states that will also start experiencing this as well, if they aren't already, once Trump and company completely guts the federal government and fills the ranks with unqualified buttlickers. He has already filled a lot of these seats with idiots, and more and more coming as per this Project 2025. If anyone has actually read this thing, and I have, you're willing to step back and compare what Trump and Musk are doing with the Project 2025 template, you can see that this blueprint is well underway. You just have to see the forest for the trees. If you want more evidence that the corporations don't care about the little people, take a look at this story I found about Boeing Corporation. Let me pull it up. Well, it disappeared on me here. There it is. Boeing covering up another fatal max law. Okay. So, you know, if you're worried about flying, well, here you go. You know, if you want more evidence that corporations don't care, Here's another one about this beleaguered corporation that can't seem to figure out how to keep their planes from crashing and burning all over the world. In this independent article, the journalist tells us about a design flaw that's killing people, and the federal government keeps bailing this company out just because they're such an integral part of the U.S. economy and military-industrial complex, the government can't afford for them to go under. Much like what Obama told us about the banking industry he bailed out back in 2008, 2009. Meanwhile, people are dying and their airplanes, including the infamous F-35, are junk. This is one of the main reasons I don't fly anywhere anymore unless it's an emergency or near to one. Between the lax COVID protocols, rude people, and now and a bigger potential for planes to kill people, I will drive, thank you very much, or not go anywhere at all other than local shopping. So that's all I've got for you here. And I want to just kind of let everybody know here that this is what's going on at a ground level. This is what we, the people, are going to be, are enduring and are going to be enduring more of going forward. Plan on this, okay? As Musk guts everything, they try to remake the federal government and into whatever they want to make it. A lot of people are going to suffer, and you're going to see a whole bunch of stuff happening because the states don't have money. Now, some do. California has money. Texas has some money. But you got to understand, there are a lot of poor states in the United States that do not have the money to afford these essential services. And when the federal government dries up their funds, a lot of bad things are going to start happening. It's coming. I mean, some states have experienced this, but you're going to see a lot more of it. Bet on it. Okay. I'm sorry. So remember what I said, prepare yourselves, buy books. Okay. Don't rely on the internet because it might not be there when you need it the most. In a real emergency, like last year when that Hurricane Helene rolled up through North Carolina, well, guess what? They lost everything. They lost their electricity, their ability for clean water, and most especially the internet, so on and so forth. So plan on that happening. And we don't need extreme weather events anymore because even just regular weather is knocking this stuff out. As I experienced in the last storm here that rolled through my area in the Mid-Atlantic states, I had a day where I could barely put this show together because the internet was cutting in and out. A lot of editing on my part. But again, this is becoming the new normal. So I'm telling you, get ready. Okay. It's coming. So with that, I will leave you to it. Listen to my little advert and I'll be back with an episode of The Priest. I want to take this minute to explain how you can support this podcast and advertise my book. The podcast is free and can be found on these major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, and my Substack page at Crown of Beehive, the Tree of Life at Substack.com. To help defray my cost, I'm asking for donations of any amount so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast anywhere in the world. I set up a donations tab at rss.com at the Village Oak Tree and on my website at www.crownofbeehive.com, and I'll link to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you in your country. So now let me tell you about my book. Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found on all major online book retailers around the world, comes in hardcover, paperback, and ebook version. You don't want to wait for them to print you one. You can also buy a hardcover or paperback edition from me directly through the bookstore page of my website, and I'll ship it right out to you. This is a dystopian fiction about what the United States might look like by 2031 under a Christian theocracy. It's full of drama, action, and romance set against a backdrop of U.S. societal collapse. The story follows a trio of resistance fighters as they navigate across Upper New England in their quest to escape from the authoritarian regime. So that's all I have here, and I appreciate any effort you can to support this endeavor that I'm doing, no matter how small it may be. Thank you very much. All right, welcome back. So let me bring you another chapter of The Priest, formerly known as Bob. This one is chapter 26 by Michael Campy. This one, Dolly Does the Dreadfuls. We had found an old adobe shack to hold up for the day, and when we awoke just before sunset, Dolly was missing, and so was my stick. I shook Stuffy awake and asked if he had seen Dolly leave. Is he gone? Yeah, and he took my stick. I had to guess. I would say that he has gone to do something really violent and bloody, but that's just me. I think you're right, but the suspicious part of me says that since the Dreadfuls are more like him than we are, he might have gone to join them. Join who? Said Tiki. Dolly's gone, I said. He sat up and looked around. So's the pile of rags. I hadn't noticed. What the fuck? Why would they leave? Stuffy looked over and said, you're not overly bright, are you? What's that supposed to mean? I rest my case. What are you talking about? I'm talking about the idea that Dolly has done nothing during our trip to inspire anything less than absolute trust. And in spite of that, your first impulse is to mistrust him. Were you this insecure and fragile in the old world? I'm not insecure and fragile. I killed a man in the service of a defenseless child. Tiki said, I'm not a child. He'll be back. They both will, said Stuffy. Walking after midnight. Dolly had walked poor up a little after midnight. He nudged her and whispered, do you want to go hunting? Hunting for what? Not what. Who? Are you going after those men? I am. I thought you might want to come along. They're very violent and dangerous. Dolly smiled, looked both ways, winked, and said, if you promise not to tell anyone, so am I. You don't seem violent and dangerous. I try not to make a big thing out of it. We need to go if you're going. We need to go if we're going. You coming? Yes. I'll need you to tell me everything you can remember about them on our way there. Like what? First, do they have any weapons? Yes. They have some guns, some crossbows. They all seem to have knives. And I guess some of them watched too many episodes of The Walking Dead and decided they wanted to be Negan and start carrying baseball bats wrapped in barbed wire. Seriously? Yeah. The problem is there were several of them that wanted to be Negan, and they had to kind of share the name. Otherwise, they would have ended up killing each other. Sounds like some real gems. Do they have any vehicles? They had a couple, but then the gas started going bad, and they eventually just stopped working. They had them hitched to horses for a while, but then it got too hot, and the horses died. Now they pretty much stick to this area, other than going on expeditions every now and again to see if they can find people to rob, kill, or take prisoner. Did they find a lot of people? They did at first, but then all the smart money got out of the desert. They talked about the ones they had found in that town in Arizona, and they talked a little bit about you guys, but they couldn't seem to find you. As horrible as they are, I don't think they're ideally suited for the post-collapse world. They seem more like those types, type A personality guys who go on outdoor adventures and extreme training camps. But make no mistake, they have become killers, but I don't think any of them actually killed anyone before the collapse. Well, and that's going to be to our advantage. Why is that? Because before the collapse, I kill people for a living. For real? Yeah, but don't make a big thing out of it. It's just something I did. Are you going to kill them? If I have to. You may not consider this very ladylike, but can I help? That's not very ladylike at all. Of course you can. Have you killed anyone before? No, but since I was taken by this group, I thought about it a lot. Did you come to any conclusions about what it might be like? I imagined that I would enjoy it, I thought. I thought I could even develop a taste for killing. It's an acquired taste. I think I might be good at it. Can you teach me? Sure. I have to teach the priest guy, too. Why do you have to teach him? He killed someone before I met him, and I think he really felt bad about it. He may take some work. Will I take some work? Other than the practical application of physical force, I think you're actually off to a good start. Do you think there's something wrong with me? Nah, you're just one of us. One of who? The few, the proud, the psychopathic. We're an elite group. I hope the priest doesn't get mad that you started with me. He'll be fine. Shall we? This is going to be fun. So after this chapter, he moved everything over to Substack. So I'll be pulling his future chapters from over there. But you get the idea, again, of what the world could be like, especially here in the United States, under a total collapse. So let me end with this. Now, I appreciate everybody showing up. And I hope you listened or watched the video. If you do, I hope you enjoyed it. And you'll return again to, a more about the world we live in. Again, this is going to be my theme going forward from now on, that we're going to be talking about the everyday person. Not just here, but in Europe, and whenever I can find stories from people over there, and so on and so forth. But you know, everything to do with who we are. We're just regular people, and we want to know what's going to happen here. I mean, nobody likes change. but change is coming and it's not going to be good. So please like, subscribe, reply, and share the videos or audio podcast, however you watch or listen. The goal here is to resist the people who want to take our freedoms away from us. I appreciate everyone around the world, and no matter who or where you are, together, using independent media like this, we can resist authoritarian oligarchs everywhere. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as we try to survive another week of mayhem. In this season of Imoch, may the warm winds of spring finally find their way to you and push the Gaelic away from your doors. Slán go fóill.